Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to What Is Etiquette Anyway? The talk show where we are making this world a polite place to live one person at a time. We cover topics ranging from acts of kindness to handling pet peeves. If you are listening live, call 347-324-3295. Now here is your host, etiquette and image expert, speaker and author, also known as the Etiquette Lady, Miss Donna.
Good evening, happy Sunday, and welcome to What is Etiquette Anyway? The talk show. Today is Sunday, June 12, 2016, and we are broadcasting live from the lovely city of Atlanta, Georgia. Lovely, hot city of Atlanta, Georgia. How about that? Well, our topic this evening is it's not too late. It's not too late. And friend to the show, Reverend Ken Corley, he will discuss his article titled Never Too Late for a Second Childhood. You will discover why you can no longer use age or any other excuse for that matter, not to make your dreams come true. So you will certainly be inspired this evening. So stay tuned. Well, once again, welcome. Welcome to our new listeners, our loyal listeners. Thanks for being a part of our What is Etiquette Anyway family. We are so delighted that you are spending part of your Sunday evening with us. And, of course, we are blessed to have listeners of all ages. And since the name of our show is a question, we certainly want to take an opportunity to answer that, especially for the new listeners. Well, etiquette is simply a set of rules of behavior. By using these rules, people make living with each other more pleasant and comfortable. The word etiquette comes from an old French word meaning ticket. It later came to mean a prescribed routine, especially of court behavior. Now, Charles I in England copied these rules from the French court, and these rules became requirements of behavior everywhere. And I always want to send kudos out to Charles the first and second. Well, once again, welcome everyone. Reverend Ken Corley is no stranger to our show. In fact, he, his wife Amanda, and I, we are all a part of the same church family. And a couple of years ago or so, could have been three, possibly, he wrote an article trying to find the first African-American female to integrate his high school here in Atlanta. And after I read the article, I interviewed him on the show, and we found her. So that was really amazing. In fact, we did a follow-up show and had her on the show as well, along with Ken. So that was really, really a neat experience. And again, I say it was certainly a remarkable reunion, and it was one of our highest rated shows as well. Now, he also discussed another article which he wrote, which was called The Personality of Roadside Litter. And that was very, very thought-provoking. So we brought him back on the show to discuss that as well. And so whenever he is with us on this show, it's always an inspiring time for all of us. So hello there, Reverend Ken. How are you?
I'm doing great, Donna. It's always good to hear your voice. You make us feel very welcome and comfortable to be able to talk about these things, so I'm looking forward to having a chat today.
Well, thank you so much, and happy Sunday to you.
Yes.
Now, I know I've said a little bit about you, but if you wouldn't mind, if you for those who may be listening for the first time, if you could just kind of tell them a little bit about yourself as well.
Well, I was born and grew up in Atlanta, not too far from Grant Park, the Cabbage Town area, Oakland Cemetery, a couple of miles from the federal penitentiary, and between two streets called Custer Avenue and Confederate Avenue. So you had all these ghosts from the past that are connected to Atlanta, and I grew up in that environment in a middle-class neighborhood, had good parents who taught me respect and love for people, but you know, there was just a lot going on back in the 50s and 60s when I was born and was a young guy. So, but I've always been connected to Atlanta. I love Atlanta. I love the people of Atlanta. Have been here, you know, with all the transitions and the things going on. So it's been an education to grow up in Atlanta and to be a part of the community, but especially the Christian community. And so... Anyway, I went to a seminary in Missouri and left there, spent time in New York working with David Wilkerson in Teen Challenge and working in the inner city and with youth and with young people. Came back to Atlanta, spent about 10 years as a probation officer in Fulton County working with young people. And moved on from there to pastor a church and a Christian school for a number of years. Then went into construction work, into the secular field, and worked with a good company that prepared me and kept me loose and limber by staying physically involved. And but now Amanda and I, we have two children, and we have four grandchildren. And I think I'm more excited about the years ahead than I am in what I've experienced in the past. I just feel like, you know, that there's, as they say in the Bible, the latter house will be greater than the former house. And I just have some ideas and thoughts and feelings that I believe that are going to be exciting activities, you know, in the days ahead. And we can talk about a little bit later as to some of the things that, you know, ideas and dreams that we now have as we talk about having a second childhood. And so that's a little bit of it in a nutshell, Donna.
Sure. And for those of you who may be just tuning in, we're talking to Reverend Ken Corley. We're going to talk about an article that he wrote called Never Too Late for a Second Childhood. And actually, I can tell you, no matter what age you are, if you're wanting some inspiration, then you want to tune in. If you know of anyone else as well who wants to be inspired and who doesn't want or need to be inspired, go ahead and send them a tweet or text or something to let them know that we're having this conversation. And Kent, I know when Amanda sent this article to me, I just stopped and just kind of dropped everything and read it, and then kind of had my mouth hanging open. And I'm thinking, if I'm not mistaken, we're going to certainly get into the article. I think that this article was written primarily for the senior community, I think. You may have had that in mind, but...
Well, or for people who are dealing with age-related issues and getting older and wondering about their future. So, yes, seniors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I think it also has to do with how we view seniors and how we view, say, mm-hmm. parents and aunts and uncles that, you know, that are growing up around us, getting older and facing these mm-hmm. senior years.
Sure. Well, I did want to kind of put a pin in that and say that even though you pretty much wrote this for, you know, the senior community, like you just said, but I think everyone will benefit from this because it is just you know, it's very well written. It's very remarkable. And like I said, I can't say in the word inspiring enough. So it's certainly, when I read it, I immediately stopped procrastinating and began working on, you know, one of my projects that I've kind of been procrastinating on, and which is another book. And I can't believe it's been 10 years since I wrote the second one. But I tell you what, I'm just really excited now because I'm really going to get the pen going. And so once again, audience, no matter what your age is, currently, you're going to be inspired. And so, Kent, I know they're thinking, okay, what's the article about? It has a very catchy title. And would you like for me to read it, or would you like to get started reading it, Kent? Which would you prefer?
Well, I can start, and then I'll pause and let you pick up and respond if you'd like to. I think one of the facts that we're looking at is that one in three Americans, they are 50 years of age or older.
Mm-hmm.
And very often older people, seniors, begin to feel marginalized because of their age. They're either getting ready to retire, or they have retired or been forced to retire, or they're getting to the point where they may be looking at their future, Social Security, maybe some savings, and looking at their future in a way that I think is negative and not as positive as it can be. You know, very often in churches, older people feel marginalized. I mean, and I have no problem with contemporary music versus classical music and the songbook, but very often the nature even of our churches is such that they no longer feel at home in the world. There's such an emphasis on TV about youth, the commercials and so forth, that they feel, for the lack of a better word, being marginalized to one side and being spectators and observers. And they find themselves, you know, sitting there often spending a lot of hours watching TV, and when in reality they're on the wrong side of the TV. They need to be the active participants that are out there, that are involved, rather than being spectators in the stands. Because there's so much to offer. You know, I guess you might say that youth is the answer to so many things, and youth is the answer to the issues in our political system and what's going on in our country. But if youth is the answer, then how are we doing as a country today? If youth has the answers and youth are going to take us to the next generation and to the next phase of our life here, how are we doing? I just feel that our seniors have so much to offer, that they are a resource in so many ways. And we have an opportunity to draw from them. I love storytelling. I love hearing stories, and I love sitting with my grandchildren and telling stories and passing along their heritage and who they are and preparing them for the days ahead. So we as seniors, we have a great opportunity to speak into people's lives if their ears are willing to listen. But if people are not willing to listen, there's still things that we can be about and be doing with the ideas and dreams that are perhaps lying dormant. I think I opened up the article by saying that old age is not an excuse for having a second childhood of dreams and visions, that many seniors, you know, they're burying their desires and ideas and plans and purposes, and they will take it to the grave with them. And we quoted George Eliot when he said, "It's never too late to be what you might have been." Now, to me, that's hope.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Luther King said that everything that we do that's positive, that's good, is done by hope. And I think you would agree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I am so sorry. If you all would like to join the conversation, you can feel free to call in 347-324-3295, or you can send us an email, as many of you have already, etiquetteladies@gmail.com. Okay, and once again, it's never too late to be what you might have been. Wow.
Right.
That's pretty powerful. Mm-hmm.
there's a term out there that we use with when people are creative and in the antique world and with furniture, they use a word called repurpose. And I had a relative to be in Coleman, Alabama, just in the last week, picking up a couple of old barn pieces of barn wood that dates back to the 1800s. But they wanted a couple of $100 for each board. And his plan was to build some shelving and to be creative in a kitchen that he was remodeling. But people are repurposing old things, and they're repurposing, especially if you're creative and you're in the art world, there's so many ideas that people have where they repurpose a chair, repurpose even a house. I live in a house that's over 100 years old. The termites got what they wanted and left me the rest. But I have gotten into this house and remodeled and reworked it, and it's comfortable. It's a place that we enjoy living, but we repurposed this house that very easily could have just been pushed over with a bulldozer. And that's the idea that I would like, one of the ideas that I'd like to get across, that we need purpose number one. In some cases, though, we need to be repurposed. It's been placed in our head that we were, as seniors, to retire, or we've been forced out of work or whatever, to go home and to get comfortable, babysit, be inactive, watch TV, as we said. But I think that God has a completely different purpose for us than that. But, you know, to capture that idea, we have to have a change of our thinking. And that's why Jesus told Nicodemus, he said, you must be born again. And Nicodemus was surprised by the statement. You know, how does this happen? How do I get reborn? How am I born again? Well, part of that, outside of the Bible and in spiritual ways, we have to be reborn and become more childlike and recapture the nature of a child in order to be creative, to reach down deep inside of us and begin to pull those ideas and those thoughts and purposes and passions that maybe have been lying dormant for years. It takes a childlike approach to see those things rebirthed. And, of course, when I think of a child, I think of someone silly and trusting, playful, adventuresome. But there's something delightful about that kind of a spirit and an attitude. I would almost rather watch my grandchildren than I would watch TV, because I just love their creativity. I love their interaction. I love their questions. And I think God looks for that from us in trusting him as our Heavenly Father, because he's a creator. He created the world. He's a creative spirit, and he puts within us that those creative desires and passions.
And even talking about, you know, being born again, when we actually are first saved, you know how excited we are about that. Wow, you know, this is a new life for me. And as you said, as we start getting older, it's like, okay, all right, I'll do this, or I'll no longer do this. So, yeah, that's great. That's very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, you know, we quote the writer, John Piper, who said, I'm energized to dream great things, because this year Hillary turned 69, Bernie Sanders turned 75, and Donald Trump turned 70. And he goes on to say, my rising energy has nothing to do with their policies or character. It has to do with the incredible fact that all of them want to spend their 70s doing the hardest job in the world. Now, think about that. I mean, when I think, of course, number one, I think, who wants to be the president of this country right now? These three people, at this point in their life, they're not letting their age stand in the way to leading one of the most powerful nations on the face of the earth, and that's commendable. I mean, regardless of your political stance, these people can be inspiring with their desire to do this after they've reached their 70s.
Wow.
And but he goes on, you know, to add that, you know, there's 70 million baby boomers that are coming into our future. And they're thinking about leisure. They're thinking about travel. Some of them are even facing poverty and poor health. And that's to be their last days of activity. But it also could be the conclusion we may look back and say it was a wasted life. You know, I've done all these things, and I've come to this point in my life, and my life is wasted. And someone has made the statement, are we missing what we might have been? You know, people who have employed a financial planner, those financial planners will guide us in securing our senior years with money and resources and ideas to be comfortable, but very few of them talk to us about what we're going to do with our time. So for those out there who, you know, they've got their finances in order and they feel secure about that, what are you going to do with that? And I think many times we find ourselves trusting others to make decisions for us, and we need to see ourselves as being still in control of our destiny, where we're going, and what we should be about. And then for those people that consider themselves to be well off and well provided for, many of them have, you know, they've sacrificed their wealth in the pursuit of, they've sacrificed their health in the pursuit, you know, of wealth, and that's sad. And so, you know, we spend our lives working for other people and their goals, but overlooking the passions and the dreams that are lying dormant in our hearts and our minds.
And in case you all are just joining us, you are listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. We're talking about it's never too late for a second childhood. And there's just really no excuse not to go after your dream.
That's right. And I recently read a book by Karen Pipkin and Wendell Taylor talked about senior wonders. There's people that have, in their later years, have accomplished some very significant things. And they've done it late in life. And one of the people that they mention in the book is Harry Bernstein. And his career was devoted to writing, so much so that his wife had to take a second job in order to help support him. But he didn't achieve literary success until he was around 97 years of age, when he published 3 biographical novels. And then at age 98, he was awarded the Guggenheim Fellowship to support his writing. But as a young writer, he had attempted to publish 20 other novels that were not successful. Now, to me, that's an example of persistence, believing in yourself, believing that what's inside of you and the thing that you have a passion for, that you can accomplish that. But he accomplished that after he was 90 years old. I thought that was very inspiring.
Absolutely.
Then there was another illustration about Clementine Hunter, who worked as a domestic and a field hand from the 1900s to the late 1920s. And she made quilts and baskets and what they call high-tide lace and engaged in a lot of other handicrafts. But she discovered, you know, a passion for painting at the age of 50. And her folk art helped preserve the cultural and historical activities of Southern plantation life from the African-American perspective. Now, if you read her story, what she produced was in her memory and was in her head. But when she began to express that with her artwork, her collections of art are seen in 20 permanent collections across America. So here you have a person who doesn't have a lot of hope and future, doing very menial-type jobs. But when it began to come out of her inner being, out of her ideas and her thoughts, and when she began to express herself, she made such a contribution in behalf of the black community and put something out there that had been in her heart, you know, for many years. From a personal perspective, my wife's mother is 95 years old, and her stepfather is 99, and they've been married for four years. We don't ask any questions. It's okay. And they're enjoying a happy life together. But as a duet, she plays the piano, he plays the harmonica, and they share in the churches and in the retirement community with friends and working with other people that you might say, well, here they are at age 90 and 100, younger than them, but encouraging them. And he made the statement, he says, I want to preach at his home church when he turns 100. And Mom Lee's favorite quote is, every day I choose to be happy. And,
wow.
You know, we're a product of choices. So those innate and hidden and dormant seeds in our life, whenever we choose to say, I'm going to go at it, I'm going to go after it, I'm going to go for it, begins to produce life. And so I kind of end that paragraph by saying, you know, what's our excuse? What are we waiting for?
Sure, sure. And those persons who are thinking, oh, well, I'll probably not get married. I'm already 45 or I'm already 50. But as you just said, your mother-in-law's 95 and her husband will be 100, soon. And they've only been married 4 years. So that means, you know, it's not impossible.
That's right.
And I really like her saying, I choose to be happy, because actually we do have a choice. We really do have a choice.
Yeah. She's such a bright spot in our life. She was with him in the hospital when he fell last year and stayed with him for 3 days in the hospital. So we called her late one night after she had gotten home and asked her how she was doing. And she said, well, this was about 10 o'clock. We said, how are you doing? She said, doing fine. She said, I just read the book of Peter. And I'm thinking, she read the book of Peter when I would have been in the bed catching up. And she said, just finished reading the book of Peter. And she says, you know, the Bible says that we're to love the brethren fervently. So here she is after 3 days in the hospital with him, sitting with him, comes home late at night, reads the book of Peter, and she gets something out of it. So I just find her so amazing, and she sets such a high watermark, you know, for all of us.
Wow. How amazing. So those of you that are out there listening, what's our excuse?
Yep.
We really don't have one. We really don't. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Have you signed up for the Public Speaking Club yet?
Public Speaking Club? What's that?
It's the club Miss Riley teaches. You learn to speak comfortably in front of others, how to make introductions, how to introduce your parent to a friend, meetings, greetings. In fact, you learn numerous public speaking tips. Some of my favorite topics include impromptu speaking, how to have great posture and poise, and a lot more. And you learn how to have great social skills, all while gaining more self-esteem and confidence. It's so much fun.
As a parent, I know that academic skills coupled with social skills help make a child well-rounded. That's why I enrolled my children. They volunteer to speak at every opportunity. Their teachers brag on them all the time.
Wow. Oh, I'm too short to raise my hand in class, and I hope the teacher doesn't call on me. I want to join this public speaking club. I'll ask my mom.
Say goodbye to being shy. Sign up today for the public speaking club at www.pagesetiquette.com. Once again, the website is www.pagesetiquette.com. Hurry, avoid the waiting list. This club fills up quickly. www.pagesetiquette.com.
You are listening to What is Etiquette Anyway? The talk show. Call us at 347-324-3295. Now back to the show.
Okay, we are back, and we are having a wonderful conversation with Reverend Kim Corley. We're talking about it's never too late for a second childhood. And here, I want to go ahead and go to a couple of the emails we've received so far, okay?
Sure.
And then we're going to get back to completing your article. It says, thank you, Etiquette Lady, for your topic this evening. I am unhappy at the place of business where I work. I've been there 13 years, and I am comfortable, content, but have no joy. Please ask your guests, how can I get more courage? And this comes from Phil from Boston.
Yeah. You know, one of the characteristics of a child is that they are adventuresome. Now, I'm not sure how old this person is from Boston, but, you know, you can see your years ahead of you as being something that you can invest. We don't want to be unhappy in what we're doing, and I think that it's important to realize that sometimes we have to be willing to take risk. A child will get up time and time again to learn to walk. A child will probe with their fingers at things that are a curiosity to them, and we've got to have an adventuresome spirit. That's not to say quit your job and just be out there waiting for something to happen. I think we have to do a personality assessment and a thinking assessment as to what it is that really wakes me up in the morning. I can remember taking a job one time that I had a title, I had a good salary, the church where we had been paid for, but in my spirit I felt like that whatever I was doing there, that it had been accomplished. It was time for me to move on. And after a while, I just began to feel uncomfortable. I mean, as pastors, we don't have to be forced out of a church because people have voted us out or, you know, we are unhappy. I actually was happy with the people, but I realized in my spirit there was another level that I was to go to. But in between what I finally wound up doing, I found myself in the middle of a construction site, cleaning houses, scraping floors. But it really was the door that I went through just to put food on the table until I could get a clearer definition as to what I was to be about. So going to the next level doesn't mean making more money. It doesn't mean having more recognition and a supervisory or a promotion. Sometimes it means stepping out there and doing some things to give yourself some breathing room, and it's for you to be creative. You know, we look at solitude sometimes as being a negative thing, but sometimes we have to step back and to assess where we are before we move ahead. If you're standing at the edge of a precipice, a step forward can be dangerous, but a step back can be very positive. So I just encourage this person to set themselves aside, truly turn the Sabbath into a day of rest and meditate and open themselves up to God and allow him to drop things in their spirit and begin to act on those small things. You don't have to make radical changes. You just, those small little changes can be the stepping stone. You go through one door in a house and you'll see five doors. And sometimes it just means being bold, like a child, being courageous, being adventuresome. I hope that might help.
Certainly. And I know a lot of times our pastor, Pastor Mark, talks about our purpose and how to really discover our purpose, because, you know, so many people are working a job or they spend a career doing something that they totally and completely hate because they know that that was not what they were necessarily created to do. So discovering your purpose is really, you know, it's very, very important. In fact, this next email says, Dear Etiquette Lady and Reverend Kent, my husband despises his job that he has been working for 22 years. He feels that he is too old to change careers. What do you think? Thanks. And this comes from Deb from Snellville, Georgia.
Yeah, it's interesting how both of those questions relate to our jobs and what we're doing. And I know that's difficult to turn loose of a familiar place, and sometimes that's not always the answer. I think sometimes that we have to look back, see what we've accomplished, what our experience has brought forward to us, and ask how can I use this? If I'm making a job change and I need to be doing something different, how has this 23 years of experience prepared me for that? Now, if we're working just for that hourly wage, that's one thing, and I think that's very negative. But if we're working to make the environment around us and what we're doing a better place, sometimes even that can change our mindset in terms of being an asset to the place that we're working, while at the same time also, like I say, asking ourselves, how has this job and what I have learned here, how can that prepare me for the next step? There's one point in the article that I'd like to bring out, and the gentleman, Mr. Bernstein, that wrote the books at age 90, he made the point. He said, I could not have accomplished what I've done any earlier in life, even 10 years ago, and he would have been in his 80s. He said, it's required life lived, wisdom learned, and trials endured. And there's some things that we cannot do any earlier in life, but everything we have gone through, it has a value, and it has a quality to it that we need to assess and say, how can this begin to lay the foundation for what I might do next? So, because I know the roots run very deep when you've been employed at a certain place, but to give up that very quickly, I don't think that there's wisdom in that. I think you have to look at that very slowly and be calculating. But ask yourself, what have I learned here? What have I learned, and what will I take to my next step? And what is being able to identify what it is that I would do differently? What is it you have a passion for? What is it that I love? What is it that makes me want to get me up in the morning? I think that's critical.
Sure. And I know I have, been on jobs in the past where I wasn't really comfortable there, but I knew that I was passing through. And I also was aware that I was there on assignment.
Exactly.
Part of that assignment was I had to be a light there.
Right, yeah.
And if you can understand that, a lot of times we are placed at certain places at certain times so we can make a difference. We know that we're passing through. We're not going to necessarily be there forever or long term. But
right.
I always look at it as being on assignment. And
right.
So you'll still be there until your assignment is complete. And usually that assignment is to make a difference, to be a light in that place.
And, that's a really a good point, Donna, to make. I can remember as a probation officer my first couple of years, I did not have background in social work. Because of my work in New York, it really opened the door for me to get into the job as a juvenile probation officer. And I really didn't feel that qualified, and I was thinking about, if I've had biblical training in a seminary, I need to be out there winning the world and pastoring a church. And a very wise supervisor said to me one day, she said, well, Ken, she said, I know you have a heart to serve God, and you have a heart to reach people, but if you were not in this position, who would you want to be in your position? Who would you want to take your place to do the job that you're trying to do? And that really sobered me up, because I thought, I need to look at this different, because I would want a Christian to be in this position, to be reaching these young people. I would like for a person to have values, to be helping these people, these young boys, to change their life. So if you were not in that position, who would you want there? Because it's an opportunity, as you're saying, to be able to change the culture of that job, to change the culture of that office, to change the culture, of that place. And that's what we are to be, as you're saying, to be light.
And so hopefully that will certainly help the way that, people that feel that way, you're there, you're on an assignment. So pray and ask God, okay, what is my assignment exactly?
Right.
Let's see, we have another one. It says, Etiquette Lady, my family and I listen to your show every week. My grandmother retired last year and is very bored staying home every day. She's been praying about what she can do. She enjoys helping others so much that she really hasn't taken much time for herself. How can we encourage her? thanks in advance. Thanks for a great show. This comes from Kathy from Tampa, Florida.
Yeah. Well, I learned some time ago that when it comes to seniors in the home and to older people, whether it's a mother, an aunt, or an uncle, and being providing the home for them and they live with us or whatever, or they live nearby, that it's my responsibility as a relative or as a child or as a nephew that I am to honor them, I am to respect them, but it's not my job to make them happy. That only can come from within them and with their relationship with God himself, for them to be happy. And so for someone who has been working for X number of years and they've come to a point and they don't have there's not much perspective about their future and what they want to do, you can encourage by asking questions, you know, well, what is it that you enjoy doing? What is it you love the most? And getting them to talk about all of this internal feelings that they have about themselves and about what they would like to do and to be able to be an encourager. But I ceased to try to make my mother-in-law happy, to make others happy. That's something that has to come from within them and from God himself. I do have some ideas that I would like to share, Donna, about how to start a second childhood, if we could move to that point. And let me just kind of lay out the perspective of how adults many times think or have been thinking that holds them back. And the words that I coined here, many times there's fearfulness, there's anxiety, there's the negative, being hopeless, they feel victimized, forgotten, limited, friendless, left behind, regretful, unhappy, short-sighted, resistant, unteachable, no future, and living in the past. And sometimes that characterizes a person who is just a hardened adult thinker and not realizing how damaging that is to their future. Whereas a child, their mindset is believing, trusting, wonder, curiosity, adventuresome, asking questions, trying, simplicity, being spontaneous. My little boy used to sing. I loved to hear him sing when he was very young, and he'd be playing by himself, but it came out of his heart. And I love that spontaneous melodies that he would bring forth. But we feel unfinished, imperfect, living just one day at a time and not believing that we have a future. Well, I believe that we can start a second childhood with a few ideas. The first one is revisit your past dreams. Revisit the past ideas and dreams and things that have inspired you in the past. And for whatever reason that they've been suppressed, they've been criticized, they have been pushed back, we need to go back and even sometimes sit down with a pen and a piece of paper and revisit those dreams. What was I dreaming about when I was a teenager? What was I dreaming about as a young mother or as a young person or a single guy? What was it that I really wanted to do? To begin to ask ourselves, well, what was that connected to? Where did that come from? To find what it is in our hearts that are the seeds, I'm not going to say success, but they're the seeds of our dreams, the things that give us passion. So we need to revisit our past dreams. Write them down. Think about them. Talk to people about those that share some of those same things together. There's nothing like collaborating with other people with their dreams and sharing your thoughts about that. The second thing to starting a second childhood is to see each day as being new. You know, the Bible says that the psalmist says, this is a day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Every day is new. His mercies are new every morning. So regardless of what our past is like, we have a spotless future. We have an uncharted, we have a clean slate for that day, for that week, and for the years ahead. And many times because we hang on to the past and our failures and our shortcomings and our disappointments, we can't move ahead. You've got a spotless future. So see each day as being new. Revisit your past dreams. See each day as a new day with new opportunities. And like you said earlier, Donna, that I believe that we daily have divine appointments. People will come across our path that will inspire us, that will encourage us. And we need to see those as perhaps in many times sent from God to us to inspire us or to give us encouragement or to speak into our life in different ways. Mm-hmm. And let me encourage your listeners in this regard. Keep a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper in your pocketbook or in your pocket at all times to write down these ideas, to write down these inspirations, to record on paper these things that come to you. I very easily forget sometimes. And so keeping a pencil and keeping a piece of paper, someone has said that the most successful way to having a long-term memory is to keep a short pencil. So keep a pencil, keep paper with you to record these ideas and these dreams. So revisit your past dreams, see each day as being new. The third thing, realize that the biggest resource for you having a second childhood is that you are the biggest resource. You're the biggest resource in your life, not other people, not even money, not any of these obstacles that you see to accomplishing what you want to accomplish in life. You are the biggest resource, and you need to believe that God has put you on this earth for a special purpose, a special plan, a special part of life. Now, it may be reduced to your home and your neighborhood. One of the goals that Amanda, my wife, and I have is that I want to meet all of the people in my community. And I'm finding ways to meet them. I share food. I have some chickens, and I share eggs with them. I share vegetables out of my garden. I give people rides. Because I want to build relationships. I want to know my community. And so I'm not going to stand on the side and say that people are not friendly and I can't make a change in the culture when I have these little opportunities right next door or behind me or down the street. So revisit your past dreams. See each day as being new. Realize that the biggest resource that you have is you. Mm-hmm. The fourth thing is move, act, begin to start somewhere. My father-in-law, which was my wife's natural dad, he was 75 years old when he made 3 trips to Africa. He made 5 trips to Russia to help start churches. And when he was 86 and 3 weeks before he died, he had a radio program that was 5 minutes long called Let's Talk About Jesus. Now, that man inspired me at his age and as a senior. He told me one day, he says, you know, I have learned that I have a frustrator button, and I can cut that frustrator button off when I want to. I can choose to cut off my frustrations. And I thought that was pretty remarkable, a bit of wisdom from a 75, 80-year-old man that I treasure that. And he made this other statement. He said, do you know that the first 2 letters in God's name is G-O? Go. And as people who want a second childhood, we've got to be active. We've got to move. As a matter of fact, that's the key to longevity. I used to work at Emory Hospital on the front desk, and it was in a semi-retirement community, and there were people in there that were from 60 years on up. And the most healthy people that I saw in that community were the ones that had a lot of friends and that stayed active. I remember one lady, her first name was Caroline, and she was from Canada. She was 100 years old, and when she came through the foyer, she didn't have time to talk because she was busy. She was going somewhere, and that might be the question and the challenge today. Where are you going? Do you have somewhere to go? Do you have something to be about with a purpose each day? The people that were the most ill and health-related issues were the ones that sat in the foyer, and, you know, they were they talked about their aches and their pains, their medication, and the bad food that was being served, And those people eventually, you know, would waste away. But Caroline, I saw her helping a lady out of the car that was 70 years old. And Caroline was 100. So be prepared to revisit your past dreams. Each day is a new day. Realize the biggest resource is you. And then move and act and be active in your life. And I think that you will, you know, begin to experience changes in your life when you take that mindset, recapturing the childlike spirit.
That's very, very good. That's very good information. I wanted to say something, too. You were talking about, when you said something about making sure that you keep a pencil and some paper nearby. I do it. I journal. And right on my nightstand, I keep a journal and a pen. And many times I will wake up through the night or very, very early in the morning, and I will write things down. And what I used to do, I used to say, okay, Lord, when you would give me, you know, download some things into my spirit, I would think, it was usually around 4 o'clock, I would say, well, Lord, can you give me until 6 o'clock because I'm going to go back to sleep, and then I'm going to wake up and write it down. And that did not work. And so what I do is I have a flashlight. I have a flashlight, a journal, and a pen. And as the Lord is downloading information, I just turn my flashlight on, grab my pen, and start writing down. And I know a lot of people now are saying, oh, that's just so old school. Or I keep, I know we're in a digital society, I understand that. So they do, everybody pretty much has recorders on their phone, and there are many recorders too. So yes, when these thoughts and information come to you, you do want to, you know, you can speak it into your recorder, but then you want to write it down, because it's just something about writing. It says write the vision, make it plain. It's something when you actually put it down and you look at it in front of you is when it really makes a great impact. And I know some people keep vision or faith boards, and you generally hear about those when? For the new year. But that's not the only time that you can, you know, put your faith or vision board together, and you want to put those things on the board so you can look at it. And when you look at it, and then you can go, like you said, you can run with those, you know, those ideas.
Well, you know, you mentioned something, and I think it's really important for all of us, is just how often we waste the 7 or 8 hours that we supposedly are sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Those hours, we're actually under anesthesia, I would say. I mean, it's almost like we're in a state of death while we're sleeping. And we overlook the fact that that's creative time. It's important time. Your subconscious is working during that time. There's numerous scriptures in the Bible that through dreams and visions that people were given direction. And so I would encourage the listeners to believe that when you go to bed at night, prepare your heart before you go to sleep. The Jewish day starts in the evening when the sun sets. It doesn't start when the sun rises. And we should prepare our hearts at night before we go to bed to have it in the most restful, inspirational, encouraging thinking process before we go to sleep. We often stay up till 9, 10 o'clock watching the news and all of the negative things that are out there. And by the time we get to bed, we're agitated, we're tense, we're tight. But it's during those times that the Holy Spirit and God himself will speak to us and drop things into our life. And many times it's a good place for issues to be resolved and to be worked out if we will give that time to God during the night season. And we're kind of getting off the subject, but I think as far as people who are wanting to develop their dreams and develop their visions, it starts in our nighttime during our rest that things can be dropped into our heart or this organizational and subconscious mind and getting good ideas. I heard a man one time tell the story about being with a successful businessman in Dallas, and as they're driving through town, the man said, "That building is mine, that building is mine, and that building is mine." He said, "How did you get those buildings?" He said, "I got a good idea." It starts inside of us. Psalms 1, you know, talks about being blessed is the man, you know, that sits not in the counsel of the ungodly or stands in the way of sinners, but, you know, his delight is in the law of the Lord, and he meditates day and night. And it says, whatsoever he doeth, it goes on to say in that first psalm, whatsoever he doeth, it shall prosper. Why? Because he's been meditating on truth. So the scripture gives us correct thinking. Correct thinking leads to good ideas. Good ideas leads to success.
Mm-hmm.
And that can happen in the night season as we're meditating on the truth and the values that's found in the Bible itself.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, audience, just in case you joined us late, we are about to wrap up. You're listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. We have Reverend Ken Corley. He has been sharing some wonderful wisdom with us. Of course, stemming from the topic of never too late for a second childhood. And in case you did join us late, our show will archive, so you'll be able to go back, no worries, you'll be able to go back and listen to it in its entirety. And as I said, this was going to be an inspiring show, and we certainly like to do that on our show. And I thank you all for joining us. And Ken, I thank you so much for your time. We are actually about to run out of time, and I would just, you know, in conclusion, what would you like to leave the listeners with in a couple minutes we have left?
Well, without being too trite or simple, I just believe that in the midst of all the challenges that we have as older people, you know, with health issues and family issues, that there's light in the midst of all that. And God can help us as individuals to be a resource to those around us if we will realize the value that we have to God, and that age does not limit our abilities in every way. Of course, I know there's some limitations, but no, there's much that we can do if we will believe that we can have a second childhood. Become like little children before God.
And be exciting. Yeah. Well,
right. Again,
thank you so much again for your time.
Yeah.
And everyone, thanks so much for supporting our show, for listening, those who sent us messages. If you joined us for the first time, we thank you for that as well. And, of course, our loyal listeners who tune in each week, we're so glad you're part of our What is Etiquette Anyway family. If you have an etiquette question or if you have an etiquette topic you'd like to hear us cover in the future, please be sure to let us know, because etiquette crosses every single avenue in life. Remember the golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated. Please tell your friends and family about our show, invite them to listen as well. After all, our goal is to make the world a polite place to live, and we know we can only do that one person at a time. Remember, never tire of loyalty and kindness. Hold these virtues tightly. Write them deep within your heart. And that is one of my favorite proverbs. It's Proverbs 3:3. And we ask you to please make sure that you initiate a random act of kindness this week. Okay? Once again, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll talk again next week. Good night. Take care. And God bless.
You've been listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. Please join us again next time as we'll discuss another exciting topic.